friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
America listeners, I'm Mukbil Yabaro. I'll be filling in for Sonny Young for the next 2 weeks. Today's show will be filled with English Premier League talk with my VOA colleague, Kali Abdu. We also have former African Footballer of the Year, Emmanuel Amuneke. Talk to Iron Mike and Boney about having coached this year's African Footballer of the Year, Victor Osimhen, as well as NBA highlights from this past weekend. Let's get into the December 18th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Starting off the show with some interesting NBA action, the Golden State Warriors beat the Portland Trail Blazers 118-114. Although the Warriors won the game, their sharp shooter and arguably the best three-point shooter in NBA history, Steph Curry, was 0-for-8 from three-point land. The last time Steph did not score a three-pointer in a game was November 8th, 2018. Over 5 years ago. He finished last night's game with 7 points, but luckily for him, his sharpshooting buddy Klay Thompson went off for 28 points and made 5 of his 10 three-point shots. Also, the Milwaukee Bucks beat the Houston Rockets 128-119. Giannis Antetokounmpo breaks the team record for rebounds, surpassing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Dave Ferry from the Associated Press has more.
Damian Lillard, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Chris Middleton carried the Bucks past the Rockets, 128-119. Lillard poured in 39 points and had 11 assists as Milwaukee earned its 13th straight home win. He hit 3 of 4 free throws in the final minute after Dylan Brooks and Ime Udoka each received 2 technical fouls. Antetokounmpo finished with 26 points and 17 boards, breaking the team career rebounding record previously held by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But the game was close until Middleton scored 14 of his 20 points in the fourth quarter. Fred VanVleet's 22 points led the Rockets. I'm Dave Ferry.
Dame Lillard chimes in and says, how good the team's been feeling playing together. A ton of fans across the NBA have been wondering how this new dynamic duo of Giannis and Dave will pan out. This is what he had to say.
The last two games definitely felt different. You know, I think I had, you know, some good games before, but it was just, I'm a shot maker, so the ball was going in, but this is good as it's felt, you know, just in rhythm, the timing of how it's happening. You know, this is the best it's felt.
The Boston Celtics have started off 14-0 at home this year with their 114-97 win against the Orlando Magic. We have Dave Ferry again from the AP.
The Celtics remain unbeaten at home with a 114-97 victory over the Magic. Boston's 14-0 home record is its second best start in team history, behind only the 17-0 record by the 57-58 team. Jaylen Brown scored 17 of his 31 points in the fourth quarter. Jason Tatum added 23 points, and Kristaps Porzingis added 15 with 10 rebounds as the Celtics beat the Magic in Boston for the second time in 4 days. Paolo Banchero led the Magic with 36 points and 10 rebounds, but Orlando shot just 38%. I'm Dave Ferry.
Celtics star Jaylen Brown had a huge fourth quarter to end the game with a team-high 31 points. Here's what he had to say post-game.
I'm going to do whatever our team needs kind of guy. Like first quarter, fourth quarter, don't matter. I just take advantage of the opportunities that I get, make the right reads, and I get in the rhythm at any point in the game. It can just add to success.
Moving over to the football pitch in English Premier League football, Arsenal are back on top with a 2-0 victory over Brighton, and Liverpool has had a tough draw, 0-0 with Manchester United. That drops them down to the second spot of the table. Here to discuss not only those games from the EPL, but a whole lot more, I have in studio with me my VOA colleague, Kali Abdu. Kali, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, so let's get started. Arsenal at the top of the table. You know, that's my team, so yeah. I definitely feel great about their win against Brighton. What were your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, big win. I mean, there were a lot of opportunities to make it very comfortable. But at the end, what matters is 3 points, couple of goals on the board, and Arsenal are top of the league.
Absolutely. If I were to ask you, what was the most controversial game or just a game that you really enjoyed watching this past weekend?
I mean, a lot of people, you know, were looking forward to Man United playing Liverpool. obviously Liverpool were top of the league. If Liverpool had got those 3 points, you know, they would start to create a gap at the top. But they drew, which allowed Arsenal to pip them up. You know, the game was a little drab. You know, it wasn't as exciting as people thought. But that's kind of what we have come to expect with those fixtures. Man U, Liverpool, they're always very cagey.
Yeah.
You know, not much given away. But in terms of the other games, mm-hmm. you know, Aston Villa, man.
Okay. Before we get into Aston Villa, last meeting between Man United and Liverpool ended in a 7-0 thrashing, right? In favor of Liverpool. So my question to, you know, our colleague Gwen and Sunday, some of these Liverpool fans was, you know, do you think, and my main man, Dave Vandy, you know, Liverpool fans across the board. So my question to them is, what made you think that, you know, Man United was going to come down and lay down? Because when you beat a team with that kind of pride, that kind of fan base, that type of ego, even though they're having a very, very difficult season, they really came to play yesterday. Right. I don't know if that strategy is something that I would have been comfortable with, because they weren't attacking at all. Mm. They parked the bus in the back mm-hmm. and decided we are okay with 0-0.
Yeah.
You know, so tell me a little bit about Erik ten Hag's strategy as he is in the hot seat for that club.
I mean, I hate to say it, the United fans that I know were very upset when Jose Mourinho did the exact same thing and parked the bus in certain games because they didn't have the capacity to attack, and they parked the bus, and the fans weren't okay with that, and Jose Mourinho was out of there.
Right.
And now with Ten Hag, they seem okay with it. What it tells me is they're starting to come to terms with where they are. They're not the United of Sir Alex Ferguson days. They're United who is maybe in transition. And perhaps they don't have the tools that they need to compete with a Liverpool. And, you know, when you lose 7-0, you have to park the bus against them. Because you see, at the end of that game, their fans were celebrating like they won the game.
Right. Absolutely. I was quite shocked myself.
Yeah.
You know, but all I know is if they wouldn't have parked the bus, that game would have been really bad for
yeah,
them.
Yeah, it tells you where they are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, on to Aston Villa. Aston Villa creates somewhat of a really, really good comeback against Brentford. 2-1, Brentford goes up 1-0, and relatively late in the game, Aston Villa gets back. Do you think Aston Villa is one of the hottest teams in the league right now?
Absolutely. They won at least 15 games straight up, just back-to-back-to-back-to-back wins.
Right.
That was my favorite game of the weekend, because when I saw they were losing 1-0, I thought, oh, here we go, you know. You know. But then I saw they were tied 1-1, and I thought, okay, they did great to at least draw the game. I never saw them winning the game. I just didn't expect it. So that tells you, you know, just how much impact Unai Emery has had in the side.
Yeah, no, he's a solid manager, you know. Having started this rebuild that Arteta has really kind of taken to the next level, I don't think he gets enough credit. Emery's quite a manager.
Yeah, true that. He was your manager.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He was Arsenal. Yeah, yeah. So he definitely had a vendetta against us last week, too, making sure that, you know, they gave us one of our few losses of the season. But, hey, we'll take it. Aston Villa's a solid team. What do you think makes that Aston Villa team so solid? Because when you really look at them across the board, it's not that they have, like, super duper quality players in respective positions, you know. Shout out to Bailey, you know, as a winger, he's amazing. But outside of him, you look at some of their players and they don't really stand out to you, right?
Yeah, it's the manager, you know. Just kudos to the manager. He has a very clear idea of what he wants to do. He's communicating it very well. I'm gonna say Steven Gerrard was there, didn't do so great. You know, he communicates in English. You know, most of the players that they have are English.
Mm-hmm.
Unai Emery has the language barrier. Because some people thought, well, Arsenal, that was a problem. It's like a language barrier thing. He wasn't communicating, right? But he comes in and, you know, he has the players flying. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's gotten certain signings that perhaps Steven Gerrard didn't have. You know, they brought Diaby from Leverkusen. Leverkusen is top of the league in Germany.
Absolutely.
They brought players like Zaniolo, even though he's not really playing. But I would say, what Unai Emery has done has been to give the players a clear identity, and also he gave them a lot of fight. Don't forget, you know, their captain, McGinn, whatever his name is, he's not again, he's not top three players in the league. But not when you see him play
but
right now,
he's a baller, though.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
The goal that he scored was unbelievable.
Absolutely.
Great touch. He turned into it, you know. Yeah. So, no, I think you're right. I think also when you have a manager of that quality that really forces everybody to be accountable, it brings the best out of players, too. So, yeah. Shout out to Emery. All right, if we're going to get to top goal scorers and just some, you know, who you think is really doing their thing. We know at the top is Haaland,
right.
as expected. But outside of that, talk to me about some of these other players at the top.
Salah is there. You know, we come to expect that. But Bowen is absolutely just killing it right now. He's scored 10 goals already. You know, for West Ham.
Unexpected.
Have you ever in your life
no.
thought that Jared Bowen would be top three goal scorers in the league?
I didn't think he was going to crack top 20.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still a long season to go, yeah. but, you know, yeah.
Very
shout
impressive.
Out to you know, that West Ham team is another team that I really like them,
yeah.
you know. They're
yeah.
middle of the pack right now, but they're, you know, Mohamed Kudus is a baller.
Wow.
That
signing of the season, one of them.
For
yeah.
sure, for sure.
Yeah.
I love that. So if I'm looking at the top 10 list, I'm seeing five of the top 10 players are of African descent, you know, have some African descent in them. If we were talking, we mentioned Mohamed Salah,
right.
Liverpool, right? Dominique Solanke, he's British national, but Nigerian descent.
Yep, yep.
He's also had some potential talks. There's talks that Arsenal, if they can't land Ivan Toney,
they might go on. Yeah,
looking at him. What's your thoughts on him? What do you think is the difference between somebody like him and Eddie Nketiah, for instance?
You know, it's hard for me to compare them because I think Nketiah is you may not think of him as world class, but I think he's just right there. He just needs maybe a little bit of luck and for things to go his way, but he's right there. Whereas Solanke, I think Solanke, in my opinion, is just below that. But he's been climbing, same as Jared Bowen. He's impressed me this season. You know, Dominic Solanke came from Chelsea's academy. Mm-hmm. And it took him quite a long time to just...
develop.
Yeah, to develop. But it seems like he's starting to develop. Now, if Arsenal buys him, I'm going to equate it to Manchester United signing Haaland from Atlanta. Now, am I saying he won't do it? No, he may come in and just bang the goals in. But again, I'm comparing him and Nketiah, and I think Nketiah is just a level above.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think it would be a backward step to bring in Solanke over Nketiah because they're, if anything, they're at the same level.
That's fair. What about Ivan Toney?
You want to get Ivan Toney. You want to get Ivan Toney.
No.
Yeah, you want to get Ivan Toney. If you can't get somebody like Osimhen, you get
yeah.
Ivan Toney.
Oh, Osimhen's off the table now. You know, they're saying that there's talks of him re-signing with Napoli.
Yeah, probably be a release clause of $130 million or something.
Yeah,
you can do that.
I don't know if we could do
you
that.
You can do that. You can do that.
Man, okay, if we're going down this list, Alexander Isak, Nicholas Jackson, Brian Mbeumo.
Mbeumo is nice. Let me just say, you know, Mbeumo is real nice.
Yeah.
And out of that list, the one that I'm not particularly fond of is Jackson.
why is that?
Jackson, man, he just, you know, I just think that a player, you know, playing number nine at Chelsea, when you used to have the drug buzz, you know,
yeah.
I think that a Chelsea number nine needs to be more lethal. But, you know, he scored 7 goals, you know.
Yeah, he also had that that hat trick against Tottenham with 9 players.
Yeah,
right?
You know, you kind of, if you take that
three away, he's not really
you know,
there.
He's yeah. not in there. But,
yeah.
again, you know, these players have scored their goals. You can't take them away from them, but...
Mm-hmm.
Just my opinion.
No, solid. Since we're on the African topic as well, AFCON 2023.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, I'll be over there. You'll be doing a podcast. Talk to me about what your thoughts on are some of the potential teams to watch for the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you have the usual suspects. I mean, you always look at Mo Salah. You know, Mo Salah has been up there at the top for the last few years. He hasn't won the AFCON yet.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people were looking at him to see if he can do it. Of course, you have teams like Senegal. My top three are Egypt, Senegal, and Nigeria.
Oh, I like that list, but what about Nigeria not looking great coming out of that World Cup qualifiers and they're in that group with Ivory Coast, home nation?
Yeah, I think it'll always be a problem with Nigeria just because, you know, they do have maybe too many players.
Mm.
And it's kind of a selection headache. So a manager needs to really know their onions to build a team. Because it's like a puzzle. You know, you have maybe too many strikers, too many, you know. It's a balance that I think that maybe the manager hasn't found yet. But I think that in a big tournament, sometimes, you know, that just locks in. I think that the manager may find the right mix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm thinking before or during the tournament.
Yeah.
Remember, let me remind you of the World Cup. Argentina didn't start well.
That's a fact. They lost to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, and then the rest is history. So
absolutely. No, I like that take, man. I will say, though, I think Ivory Coast, you know, the way that they came out, World Cup qualifiers, they're scorching hot. Plus, they have the fan base and the crowd. They're going to be a problematic team, you know, against anybody. So I'm interested to see what they do.
They have the players. Mm-hmm. Sorry. They have the players, actually, to your point. Like, you know, this kid in Brighton, he's nice. Of course, you have Jackson. You know, and, you know, yeah, they have players. But again, I just think in terms of the pedigree, you know, players who have the experience when the tournament becomes the tournament past the group stages and you kind of count on the experience to get you over the line, I think.
Zaha's Ivorian too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Zaha, you know he's on form.
Yeah. But, you know, I looked at him in the Champions League and
he banged a couple goals in though.
Yeah, but I felt like he's off color a little bit.
Yeah.
That's just my take on watching him, you know, compared to when he was at Palace.
For sure.
He seems to be a little off color. But again, maybe the tournament is, you know, playing at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But Kali, you know we could talk for another hour or so, but thank you for being on the show with
me.
I'll definitely have you back on later on this week to talk more football, you know, whether it's AFCON, EPL, Champs League. Thanks, my man.
Thanks, brother.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week. Right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Former African Footballer of the Year in 1994, Emmanuel Amuneke says Nigerian and Napoli forward Victor Osimhen deserved to win the African Footballer of the Year award. Osimhen, 24, emerged as the African Footballer of the Year for 2023 at the recent CAF Awards in Marrakesh, Morocco. Amuneke coached Osimhen as a member of the Nigerian national team that won the FIFA Under-17 World Cup in Chile in 2015. Mike Mbonye spoke with Amuneke and has this report.
I think my reaction is that I think Victor deserved the award that he won, becoming the African Footballer of the Year. When we look at what he has done with Napoli, and then look at the other two players, Salah and Hakimi, what they have done, I think Osimhen stands out in terms of his contribution and his goal scoring. And also, he's being recognized in the world in the best in terms of, you know, coming eighth position among the best players in the world. I think Victor is a blessing to us. Victor is a blessing to Nigerians. And I think we are happy at this moment to have a player becoming an African Footballer of the Year, and he's coming from Nigeria. I think this is what our football needed to bring hope, to bring motivations to the young ones that are coming. Yeah. It is true that our football a little bit has been kind of ups and down, but having this kind of award, then a player that was just played in 2015 in the World Cup in Chile, and within 8 years he is now the African Footballer of the Year. I think it's also a very good thing, and also I must congratulate our other assists. Sir, that also won, the female African Footballer of the Year, and also our sister also, Chiamaka, that won the best goalkeeper, and also the federation, for winning the best national team of the year. I think it's a very good thing for our football. We just need to build on that. We need to look at the areas that we need to improve. And I pray and hope and continue to wish the players the very best of luck in their respective clubs, in their engagement, and continue to do best and continue to make Nigerians proud.
Victor Osimhen paid glowing tributes to you as his coach. How did you discover Victor? And did you see him as a player with great potentials?
Well, I personally thank him, I think, for the attributes towards myself. I thank him for that. And it's a good thing that he was able to remember us. But the recognition was not about me, because there are a lot of people involved in his development, in his academy, the national team, the backroom staffs. We have a coach that was with us, but unfortunately, Baleri Kabiru, he passed away. I think after we won that under 17, in few years he has passed away. I pray may his soul continue to rest in peace. But I believe wherever he is, I think he will be happy that one of the players that he trains at the under 17 level has become the African Footballer of the Year in 2023. So it's a very good thing. We thank Victor and for his recognition, and we pray and hope he continue to grow and become much, much better in the world, and also use his talent to put smile in the face of Nigerians.
Coach, do you think Victor Osimhen has potentials to do well in next year's AFCON finals in Cote d'Ivoire, given the fact that he is the highest goal scorer in the AFCON qualifiers?
Well, there is no doubt about Victor's potential, and what you are seeing today is the root of hard work, the root of commitment, the root of dedication, the root of desire to excel. And Victor possesses all those qualities. So there is no doubt whether he's going to do well at the AFCON or not. What we should be, looking at is how can we, have a balanced team that can also help him. We should remember that one man cannot, do everything. So you must have a complete team. You must have a complete team in terms of the departments that can also, bring their own value to contribute to the value of Victor, which is a striker. So I think this is the direction we should look. We shouldn't mount unnecessary pressure on him because he has won the African Footballer of the Year. Then everybody is now expecting him to do the whole job. No, we should look at our team and look at how we can, have balance and how we can also help him. Because we need to also help him to be able to, help the team. So these are my view, and I wish the team the very best of luck in the AFCON that is coming very soon. And I hope, Victor can be in a position to inspire the team and inspire his colleagues. So this is my thought and my view concerning whether he has the characters or he doesn't have the character. There is no doubt about his character. He's someone that wants to win. And when you look at him playing, you could see that in him. So it's good that we have such a character in our team.
That was Emmanuel Amuneke, the 1994 African Footballer of the Year. He spoke with reporter Mike Mboni on the telephone from Santander, Spain. Moving over to the racetrack, Kenya's former women's world record holder, Bridget Kosgei, won the Abu Dhabi Marathon within
2 hours, 19 minutes and 15 seconds, almost 5 minutes ahead of Ethiopians Hawa Faisa and Ethelemahu Sinayahu. Eritrean Samson Amare won the men's race on his debut in 2 hours and 7 minutes ahead of Kenya's Leonard Barsetan and former 15-meter specialist Ilham Özbilen from Turkey in 2 hours, 10 minutes and 16 seconds. Staying on the racetrack, one of South Africa's greatest foot races, the Comrades Marathon, was held in June. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2023, let's listen to the post-race report from Myron Nacker in Durban.
The energy in the air was palpable as the just over 17,000-strong field lined up in the city of Pietermaritzburg. It was a bitterly cold winter morning, but athletes were ready to bring the heat along the 89-kilometer route down to the coastal city of Durban. In the men's race, Japanese sensation the blue-haired Joe Fukuda took an early lead, but was hunted down by a pack that included Tete Dijana and Dutch novice Piet Visma. With 20 kilometers to go, Dijana broke away, opening up a small gap, but Visma refused to let him out of his sight. In a frantic dash for the finish, Dijana kept looking over his shoulder, but managed to keep his composure to set a new downrun record in a time of 5:13.58. This humble runner, who still works a day job as a private security officer, is now a double champion. He could only celebrate being champion for 9 months after last year's Comrades was pushed to August due to the COVID-19 pandemic. When asked if that motivated him, he offered this light-hearted response.
Yes, because I felt that I was cheated. Remember, everyone was called a champ for 12 months. Myself, I was called champ 9 months. I said, no. No, there's no way I should go and defend my title.
The women's race was won by the darling of South African road running. Gerda Steyn, who won the Two Oceans Marathon in Cape Town earlier this year, was the favorite to win this year's Comrades. She controlled the race from the 30-kilometer mark, breaking free of the lead bunch. She smiled and waved to the crowd as she approached the finish, knowing that a course record was within sight. Steyn raced to the tape, beating Frit van der Merwe's 34-year-old record. In the build-up, Steyn was asked many times about whether she would target the record. She remained modest in all her responses, letting her feet do the talking on race day.
I didn't want to talk too much about the record. I didn't want it to phase me from my main goal of winning the race. You can't think about these times. But of course, I wanted to produce the best result that I can produce as an athlete. And that meant today it was the record and it went according to plan. And for that, I'm very, very grateful.
While the elites provided the entertainment up front, there was still plenty of drama to come as the clock edged towards the 12-hour cutoff. Thousands pushed their bodies to the max to reach the finish at the Kingsmead Cricket Stadium. As the gun went up to signal the end, more drama was about to unfold. In true comrade spirit, two complete strangers who came together with 9 kilometers to go raised the roof inside the stadium. Simpiwe Dludla was down, but experienced finisher JP Snyman put his arm around her, dragging her on. The clock ticked, but they persevered. Cheered on by thousands, Dludla crossed the line as the last official finisher on the day, with just seconds before the cutoff gun went off.
My friend JP said, "I need a shoulder to cry on, so we move up to this farm." So I'm so happy. I didn't know that I'll break a record of being the last person in Comrade. Thank you so much, my friend. God bless you.
Steyn and Dijana walked away with $6,500 each for their record-breaking efforts. The jubilant scenes for both the top runners and amateurs are what makes this race so great. It's why thousands of athletes make the trip to South Africa every year. The running pilgrimage between these two cities in the province of KwaZulu-Natal continues to set the standard for ultra-marathon running.
And that's a wrap for the Monday, December 18th edition of the show. Hope you all have a great day. I'm Mukbil Yabaro in Washington, in for Sonny Young. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Thank you.